Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Deviate Talks. How are you? I hope you're well. It's nice to be able to speak to you again. Incidentally, thanks very much for everyone for subscribing and pressing play. It really does make my own personal podcasting journey really worthwhile to know that you're out there listening to me. So thank you for taking the time. Now, this episode is all about aspects of travel in a kind of niche kind of way. Obviously, I'll get into that later on as we progress, but I have a new guest on, a lady I've never chatted to before, who I've literally only just introduced myself to prior to pressing record for this episode, folks. So it's literally a fresh new guest, and already we're at an understanding of how the podcast is going to go. But let me bring her on first. Big warm welcome to Miss Lauren Jones. Hello.
Hello, Davey. Thanks for having me. It's very exciting to be talking. Thank you.
You're very welcome. It's a real honor to have you here, ladies and gentlemen. This is a lady that has really piqued my interest. Lauren has a background in things like history, travel, Shakespeare, folklore, getting to see the world, has an educated background, and many, many other things. But it's the aspect of travel that really drew me in. This is a lady who's seen many parts of the world, and I'm very jealous of her because I've not really ventured out very far. But it's taken on this really interesting, exciting journey. And that's why I've asked her to come onto the show. In terms of traveling, how was your journey to this podcast? I hope it wasn't stressful.
Not at all. I'm actually not in my home this week. I'm in Wales. I'm doing some house sitting so I can see a different part of the country. So I'm in the Brecon Beacons, and I've just been walking and seeing the rain and then opening the laptop to do a bit of writing. So yeah, I'm in a very secluded sort of spooky dark landscape this week.
Wow, that sounds perfect. Is that the kind of surroundings you prefer when you want to be creative?
Oh, I don't know. I like novelty, so I'll always be finding something new. But I think being forced to be indoors by the weather is quite helpful in terms of actually sitting down and getting things written and produced, for sure.
So in terms of writing, what's your main focus? Is it travel aspect or stuff along the historian route? I know you have a history in history. So is that something you're focusing on, or is it more of a fictional tale you're trying to pen?
You know, I really wish I could just focus on one thing at one time, but I can't. It kind of all bleeds into each other. So my husband and I write a travel website. And even if I try and stick to sort of conventional travel writing, like best coffee shops or best museums or theme parks, I always get pulled in to kind of wanting to explore the kind of weird things that are going on in a place. And so it kind of always goes back to the history, because the history is always visible when you visit a new place. It's on the sort of marks you see on the stones, it's on the things that are broken and a bit disused. You're like, well, what was that before? So the history of a place always appeals to me. And then because of the history, you get pulled into what are the myths and the legends and the folklore of a place as well. So it all kind of blends into each other. But to answer your question, at the moment, mainly writing for our travel website and also writing some history audio guides for some cities around the UK.
Wow, audio guides. Is that the kind of thing if you're, say, on a tour and you get given that set of headphones and someone narrates, it's that kind of thing, yeah?
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah, so they'll be launching soon, but it'll be ones you can download and use yourself, so you don't have to wait for a tour guide. So you could do it over an hour, a day, a week, whatever you fancy when you visit a new place.
Well, are you just doing the writing, or will it be your own vocals that will feature?
We're doing both. So we've done three, and we're building them up to do them across the UK. So we've currently done Portsmouth, which is our hometown, and Brighton, which is where I was at university and lived for a few years. And I'm just working on a few more destinations now.
Wow. What's your aim? Is it to cover most of the UK, do you think?
I mean, that would be quite a kind of all-conquering aim. I think there are guides that are kind of better equipped, that know areas better in some areas, and I'd leave it to them, because part of it you can research, but a lot of it comes from real, like, local lived knowledge, like all those weird stories you hear in the pub that you can't Google, you can't find online. So I'm going to try and stick to locations that I know at least sort of partly, so where I've places I've been on, you know, I've got family living or something, so I can get a bit of a local flavour in there.
That's really awesome. Is there anything that you've uncovered in Portsmouth that maybe you didn't know before you started looking into travel guides and the history?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think that's a really, I love the fact that if you're researching the history, if you're researching stories, you're always going to find something new, because all it takes is just speaking to someone you've not spoken to before, and they have a story, and it'll usually be, well, a friend of mine, or I know someone once that did this thing, or it didn't happen to me, but this. But you hear, and these stories kind of compact and confirm. So most of the things that I knew before about Portsmouth are all the known historical events, like the things to do with various wars or some of the famous ships that are there. But the new things that I uncovered were kind of more personal stories or kind of quirky anecdotes. So go ghost stories Ooh, are a big one.
Okay.
And also there is a fort on the front of the of Portsmouth Dockyard. I don't know if it's a city you know, but there's part of it which was under siege during the Civil War, and there was quite a fun anecdote that came out of that about when they were besieged, they're not being not expecting it, and they were all drunk, and so it was a really easy quick battle because they were like, we're not going to get into this, we're too drunk to defend ourselves, so they gave it up quite quickly.
Oh my God.
Because they just knew their limits, they knew they were too drunk to defend it, so that was an easy win for the parliamentarians there. But I hadn't heard that before. I didn't realise the city had kind of had that moment of battle between the parliamentarians and the royalists in Portsmouth. So that was interesting.
Wow. I mean, I've always been fascinated with history, not just locally, but globally. And always had a real issue trying to maintain knowledge of stuff that's happened in the past. It's why every time I watch like a TV documentary or a movie, it wows me because it feels fresh and new. My mind's so bad these days. It's always fresh to see, you know, how Pearl Harbor happened or how Waterloo happened or how Napoleon came to power. These are all fascinating stories and can be linked to things that you find in the street. You can find a rock that was on the beach in, you know, World War One.
Yeah.
And it still resonates history simply by touching it. Do you find that anything like artifacts that you've touched gives you a sense of closeness to history?
What a good question. I mean, yeah, all the time. And I love going around. And I think there's nothing that can replace the physically being there and in contact with something yourself. I was really lucky to work at a theatre for 3 years. And it was a historic theatre, 120 years old. And so parts of that theatre and part of my job as working on the community side of it was doing things like history tours, ghost tours, tech tours. And I always learned something new every time I did those tours, because even though it's that old, there's still new things to find. And so in terms of touching things, touching, you know, the original brass handles, original bits of stained glass, parts of the backstage dressing rooms that are as they were when the theatre opened 120 years ago was always like a real privilege. I always really loved that. I never got bored of that.
I remember a recent, I say recent, about half a year ago now, I went to Bath, my lovely lady wife, and we did the whole historical tour, you know, of the Roman baths and the cathedrals and the town itself. What an amazing picturesque place, and there's so much history there.
Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it?
It really is. I'd never been before, always wanted to go, and just found myself engrossed in all this history and old buildings and stonework and tales that you're being told about what happened in the ancient times of this city.
Yeah.
Just an amazing place to be.
Oh, I'm so pleased you enjoyed it. I love Bath. It's so beautiful.
It really is.
You got anywhere in mind next for a little trip away like that?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, my wife and I have got this retirement dream of hiring or even owning a classic VW campervan and touring the whole of the UK, top to tail, and staying in various picturesque places. It's a dream we've yet to make real, but it's something we want to do. So, you know, listeners, if you're able to give me a camper van and get me on my way, please do. But yeah, I just would like to tour the UK, as much as it is great to hop on a plane and go to a sunny climate or somewhere that's got really amazing scenery. The UK itself is full of some of the most amazing things you're ever going to see in terms of scenery, the people, the food, the whole aspect of it. You know, why not stay on your own land and tour? It's something we want to do. I don't know if you've ever done something like that yourself, like a camper van trip or...
We've not done van life. We've done Ford Mondeo life instead.
Okay. Mondeo's good.
It's not the same. It's not the same, is it? But yeah, we went round. We're gradually seeing more of the UK. And I think part of that is getting a dog, because traveling abroad with a dog is more difficult. So we've ended up doing a lot more UK-based trips. And part of it was kind of a lifestyle choice. So last summer, for example, we spent 6 months living and working on the Isle of Skye. Oh. And that was at a dog-friendly hotel, so we could have the dog with us. But that was just, for me, like the dream UK destination of, you know, completely magical landscape, completely different kind of culture. Yeah, that was mind-blowing. So that's the pretty closest I've had to realising your dream of the UK tour.
And interesting that you've done that, because you've done a rather nice link without me even trying to do it. But I want to bring up two humans and a dog.
Yes.
Tell us about this lovely thing you've got going on.
Oh, thank you. Two humans are myself, and the other human is my husband, John. And the dog is our collie mix boy called Belka. And we started it, similar to you, just as a kind of hobby, something to enjoy outside of our sort of mainstream life, a couple of years ago. Post-COVID, we both sort of took a big leap and left our traditional jobs, as it were. You know, COVID shook everyone up, made you reevaluate life, etc. And that was something that did for us. And we thought we'd take a big career break. So we did that. We took our Ford Mondeo across to France, and then spent the next 6 months driving around, exploring Europe. Went to 22 countries. And part of it was to get married. We eloped because we weren't married at the time. And we wanted to do it as affordably as possible because we just quit our jobs. We didn't really have a budget for this. So we were doing most of it through a site called Workaway, where you exchange you work basically in exchange for accommodation and food. But because you're just throwing yourself out there and seeing what's there, it meant our route was kind of dictated by who would say yes, who would have us.
Okay.
So we ended up going to like a mountain lodge in Montenegro, worked at a campsite in Serbia.
Oh my God.
we went to the Pyrenees and just chopped wood for a couple of weeks for a guy there. So we set off thinking, well, we've got to go to Copenhagen because we've booked an appointment to get married there. But after that, it was just dotting around, right, who said yes? Who can we go to next? Right, let's get in there. Let's go, let's go. So two humans and a dog came from a way of trying to log everything we'd done, remember it all, journal it all, because I'm sure there are people that are in our shoes who want to do something different, who want to have that kind of adventure, and hopefully they could maybe learn from some of our experiences, a lot of the mistakes we made and a lot of things. You know, it didn't happen overnight. We planned and planned and planned for months to make sure, you know, it would all work and everything would, you know, boring things like visas, car insurance have to be done, as well as the romantic adventure side. So part of it was a way of helping other people that want to take that jump and just remembering the trip that we had had. Our dog wasn't with us for that bit because we couldn't get certificates for 22 countries. He was luckily being looked after by his friends here. But the dog bit comes in that we've carried on that travel since we've returned. We haven't gone back to our jobs. We've carried on traveling and sort of working, partly volunteering, partly freelancing with the dog in tow. So that's where being in Wales this week comes from. So he's now very much a firm fixture of that adventure.
That's really cool. It's nice to have a four-legged friend join you on all these walks and these trips.
It's amazing. Have you got pets?
No, sadly, I've not owned or had a pet in my life since I was a young child. And without going into too much trauma, let's just say one of the pets ate the other pet and I walked away. It's a long time ago, and I've never gone back. No, it's okay. It's one of those things. I did have many virtual pets, but even virtual pets with me don't seem to last very long. I think I've owned three Tamagotchis that lasted 5 minutes. I had a virtual dog on a video game, and yeah, he didn't survive very long. That's not to say pets aren't a good thing for a lot of people. It just doesn't seem to be for me.
Yeah, fair enough.
Please don't send me a bag with a goldfish in or anything like that. I'm not interested.
I would never do that. It's
but yeah, no pets for me, but I do appreciate people who take the time to have a pet in their life. You know, it's essentially, it's a family member.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And it's great to see. While it's maybe not for me, it's great for a lot of other people, and getting out and about, taking the dog for a walk, taking the cat for a walk, taking your hippo for a walk, whatever it is you've got, it's great to take them and go and see the world with them. They can appreciate more and not just four walls or a kennel.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's got to be challenging being the three of you, especially with such an active dog as well.
Yes.
I can imagine that Belka's really eager to see as much as possible.
Yeah, he is really active because he's a collie mix. The other part of him is Pomsky and Husky. So he's high energy, he's cheeky, he's smart. He's smarter than us by a long, long way. But that, again, is keeping us on our toes and keeping us interested and doing things like house sitting and the Workaway. We're always looking at opportunities that he'll kind of enjoy as well and he'll be able to slot into. And it's a fun challenge, for sure.
I can imagine it would be. I'd mentioned during the intro that there's a bit of a Shakespearean background.
Yes.
Is this due to you being a fan of Shakespeare or just a lot of knowledge because you've studied up?
It sounds a bit pretentious being like, oh, I love Shakespeare. But I feel like I've always loved him, or the works of Shakespeare, I should say, because I think I was introduced to it in a really good way. And I think that's how you come to being either scared of Shakespeare for the rest of your life or loving it for the rest of your life, depending on how it's introduced to you.
Yeah.
And I was really lucky that, I don't know what age you are, but I was at an age where the animated versions of Shakespeare were on TV when I was young. Okay. And they were really creepy, kind of quite trippy, quite puppet ones and different sort of very scratchy animations. Is that something you remember?
Vaguely. I'm not going to disclose my age, but let's just say I'm getting close to being around for half a century. Let's just put it that way. Okay. I've seen a few things.
Okay. So that was something that kind of definitely drew me when I was younger. And then I think I was just really lucky that I had really good teachers at school that kept me engaged, kept me interested. But I've been a teacher before, so I've taught Shakespeare a lot. I'm still teaching it a lot, still do tutoring. And I just think there's something about his characters that, again, it sounds a bit cliche, but are so real and so human that you don't have to get into analysing all the language and being a kind of real buff about it, but just relating to those characters that are going through these, you know, all these various like personal traumas and these tragedies and these dilemmas and this angst is really, really relatable. And I feel like as I've gone through my life, different characters and different plays have appealed at different times, depending on, you know, what situation you find yourself in. And something I'm working on at the moment is relating modern mindfulness and self-care techniques to Shakespeare plays, and this is a project I'm working on.
Wow.
So for example, there's a scene in Romeo and Juliet where the friar is basically telling Romeo to practice gratitude, which is like what we've all been told to be doing all through COVID, is like have a gratitude journal. And Friar Lawrence is basically telling Romeo that and telling him to stop being so ungrateful and realize all the good things he's got in his life. And there's other plays where characters have been told to go into nature and that will help them feel better, which again is something that I recognize from modern mindfulness. So I just feel like as I get older, different plays, different lines, different scenes keep on resonating at different times, and that's why I love it, that's why I enjoy it.
It shows, I mean, having a fandom and a passion for something you love, it really does come across well. I was wondering if you've ever done something like maybe stubbed your toe and just burst into a speech from Shakespeare just to get it out of your system.
Would I admit it if I had? That's the thing.
Possibly not.
Not stubbing my toe, but certainly I think it's dog walks again. Dog walks is where you end up being a bit strange and talking to yourself a lot because you can pretend you're talking to the dog. But I do like ruminate and speak out loud and speak a bit of Shakespeare when I'm walking the dog.
How many vows are you giving the world?
How many vows? The vow is that? I don't know. I don't know where the barometer is today. It's usually, do you know what? It's really pretentious. It's usually little bits of Macbeth, because I feel like Macbeth, I'm always seem to end up teaching it and studying it and reading it. It's always going on in there.
Would you say so, that's your favourite Shakespearean Macbeth, or is there a particular one that jumps out?
It just changes time to time. I went through a real, yeah, I think it's most persistently the one I enjoy the most, because the amount of times that I've taught it and read it and seen it, I should be sick of it. But again, there's always something new to discover, because every student I work with will go, oh, but maybe the character means this at this point. And I think, my goodness, I never thought of that. So it's just, it's always going to have new, yeah, connotations.
Sometimes the teacher can become the student and learn something.
All the time.
Have you ever travelled anywhere that is either mentioned or featured in a Shakespearean play, like a setting or a place?
Really great question. I mean, I got close to going to Hamlet's castle, Elsinore. Didn't quite get there, but it was close. Obviously, Scotland, Macbeth, Glam's castle and things are there. There's all the history plays that are UK-based. Obviously, Richard III's body was found in a car park not long ago.
So. Yeah, that was a strange turn-up, wasn't it?
Unexpected. I can't think of anywhere. I've not specifically gone somewhere because it's in a Shakespeare play. So yeah, that'll be on the list. That'll be for my next challenge, my next travel challenge.
Already exciting. Already, yeah. Already. Folklore. What was it that wanted you to start looking into folklore in certain places you've visited? And what things were you surprised to find?
Well, I think folklore is similar to Shakespeare in that I feel like I've always been interested, even if I didn't know it was called folklore. Part of that's due to the fact my family come from Ireland, and we'd spend most summers and holidays and everything there, and we'd spend a lot of time just sort of roaming around, and you'd find unusual things. There's a lot of abandoned houses, so that feeds your imagination, and there's also lots of sort of Celtic pagan things that you'd find. So a lot of times you'd find trees by wells with like ribbons tied in them, which as a child, again, your imagination goes wild, and straight away you think, well, why is that? How has this happened? Who's put these here for what? And that's recently found out it's like a wishing tree.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of imagination was sparked as a child, but also folklore is a part of history because it's the things, it's the kind of the folk community society part of history. It's the stories we tell each other to explain things we don't understand and give reason to things. And it evolves over time. And I was thinking about it before our conversation today, actually, about folklore sounds like it's kind of an old historic thing. It sounds like myths, legends, but I think folklore still exists. It just is always developing. And the most recent example I could think of was like the Slender Man phenomena.
Wow.
Because creepypasta is folklore, because it's the idea of these myths that are repeated again and again and again. And it's something that brings a community together because it's kind of a shared story that's being created.
Yeah.
And I mean, with that one, obviously it had real world consequences with people really believing it and those girls attempting to murder a classmate because of what they'd read on there. And it's the same with folklore. So some of the myths I'm most interested in, like the changeling myth from folklore, has real world consequences because, yeah, if people believe that they have found a changeling, some really dreadful things can happen.
Already I'm a bit scared now. This should be a Halloween episode already. I'm kind of a bit concerned now.
shouldn't have mentioned Slender Man. I'm sorry. That's it.
No, it's okay. It's a very varied range of topics. It's why this podcast is going to be such an amazing journey to go on. Again, it's travel-based. I wanted to just touch on your travels around Cuba.
Oh, yes.
I'd read that you'd done a little tour around there. How was it? And what was your favourite memory of going?
Going to Cuba was the first trip that I went on with my husband. And we went when we hadn't been together that long, because when we first met and started talking, we both realised we both really wanted to go to Cuba. So going was kind of a bit of a leap of faith. Going on a big trip with someone that you haven't been together very long is always going to be a bit of an adventure. We did it as a road trip. We tend to do that. So we hired a car, not one of the classic cars that you are famous for Cuba. But that was really exhilarating because there's no GPS and no internet. So I was navigating using like quite basic maps and he was doing the driving.
Wow, old school.
Yeah, it was really extremely cool. And it was beautiful. Like the landscapes there are like something else. Like there are areas with mountains, I think Mogotes, that look like something out of Jurassic Park. They're so lush and so stunning. Swam in the best water I've ever swum in there. And just, it was just unreal. It was stunning. And if you like coffee and you like your cigars, obviously you're in heaven there. Yeah, that was really fantastic. But that was a long time ago. I think things might have changed a little bit there now.
Quite possibly. Did you do a lot of undersea diving or swimming?
Mainly just swimming, but the swimming was beautiful.
I remember going on my honeymoon and we went to a quaint little town in the southwest part of Spain. And we went on a deep sea diving trip.
Wow.
Never done it before. Scuba diving's always terrified me. And we were under the water for 5 minutes before I started panicking, thinking there's a shark somewhere, there's a shark, there's a shark, there's a shark. Obviously, there was no sharks, but I was terrified the entire trip. It was about a 40-minute swim, including going into underwater caves and seeing these amazing things. But all I kept thinking was, any minute now, Jaws is going to pop out and eat me, and I'm not ready for it.
Oh, my God.
It's just one of those lovely, lovely, fond memories I have about swimming in Spain.
Would you never dive again? Does that put you off?
I think I would, now that I know that it's actually a safe environment and it's really well looked after and people don't just throw you into the sea where there's, you know, man-eating animals. But at the time, because it was new and fresh to me, it was a very nerve-wracking experience. Well, you learn by doing something you've never done before, I suppose.
You absolutely do. I did my diving certificate at a different time and a different time. And it's something I think about quite regularly. It's quite terrifying. Sends a chill down my spine, and I'm happy I've done it, but I can't quite believe I've done it, and I don't think I'll be rushing to go back and do it again. But
well, fair play to you. Once you've done it, you've dipped your toe, as it were, if you'll pardon the pun. You've obviously seen quite a lot of different places.
Yes.
Where would you put your top three destinations if you had to put them into a top three?
I think it depends what mood I'm in, because I think I'm naturally drawn to going to kind of wilder landscapes. I really love like wildlife and nature, and that's usually a big draw. So the Isle of Skye was actually probably now one of my top places, because we were lucky enough to see, I mean, we did put the work in, we were always going out and always exploring and always looking, and we made friends with a lot of locals that knew where to find things. So one of our friends that we made there took us out one night because he said, I think the orcas are going to come round, like now they've been spotted, they're in the Hebrides. And we saw these two orcas that I think are like the ones that do the rounds up in the Hebrides, called Jonko and Aquarius, these two orcas. And this guy was able to tell us, he's like, about 8 o'clock, it's going to come around from this rock. And we stayed there and he was spot on. He was absolutely dead on. So we saw these orcas do, you know, a swim by. And as much as I've loved some of the other travel experiences I've had, because that was just sitting out on a rock for a few hours waiting to see something in the wild. That was like magical. I don't think I can beat that, to be honest. So that Isle of Skye is up there on the top, I think.
Wow, that's such an epic memory.
It really is.
I've only ever seen them on screen, on film or TV shows, but to be able to see it in the real world, that's got to be one hell of an experience.
Oh, yeah. And it was so... Yeah, it felt very rewarding because we'd had a long hike to get to this promontory to try and see them. You may have seen them if you'd gone out on a whale watching boat, because they do run whale watching boats out there, and I'm sure you'd have had an incredible time. But it felt really special just to have like a friend be like, yeah, I think I know these animals, like a kind of wise old person from a film almost. So that's definitely up there. I've loved everywhere I've been, to be honest, because even if things don't go to plan or whatever, there's always something fun to take from it and good memories and good vibes. We recently came back from Japan. My sister and her husband live in Japan now, and we went for Christmas and New Year, and Japan was never a destination that would have been high up my list, because only because I really prefer to go out into the wilds, and in my head Japan was all like big cities and everything. And it was spectacular. It was awesome because it's just the people you meet, it's the little memories you make as you go. And it was really fun being with family in another country and celebrating Christmas in a different way. And so everywhere I go is my new favorite place until I go somewhere else, I think.
Can you speak Japanese?
No, I could say excuse me, and so I was constantly apologizing and say sumimasen, 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 getting out of people's way on the metro, sumimasen, and arigato gozaimasu. I think gozaimasu. Thank you very much.
My mind's blown. I struggle with English, as you can probably tell, but never mind learning a new language. It's hard. It's hard, especially something like Japanese, Chinese. They're very difficult languages to learn.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But kudos to you for even getting some basic words, because I'd struggle.
Thanks.
I really
Thanks.
would. Another travel aspect, I saw that you were going around certain theme parks.
Yes.
Now, does this include a certain Japanese Disney-based theme park?
Which one?
There's more than
Yes.
one.
Yeah.
What?
Are you a Disney fan?
There's certain aspects of it. I'm not into the whole cutesy, let's all dance and sing around kind of Disney aspect. I'm more the nerdy side of it. So I'm a fan of things like the sci-fi series Tron, for example. Certain Disney, I don't mind. I could probably get away with watching something like Mary Poppins or Bedknobs and Broomsticks or certain animations, maybe like Chip and Dale or something. I'm very basic in my
Yeah.
Disney fans. I know there's things like Star Wars and Marvel, which I am a fan of, but they're not what I would class as traditional Disney stuff.
Yeah.
But being over there, I can imagine the hype and the excitement is turned up even higher.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So we went to there's two parks, the two Disney parks in Tokyo. There's the traditional Disneyland, which, as far as I understand, is very similar to the other Disneylands that are elsewhere in the world. I've not been to them, but apparently it's very similar. It's got the castle, the iconic castle and things.
Yeah.
And then there's Tokyo DisneySea,
Okay.
which apparently is unique to Tokyo. So we went to that one because I thought, well, we'll never be here again. There isn't anywhere else like this in the world. And it was really unusual because it's all like sea-based. So you've got the Tales of Sinbad and there's all the kind of steampunk things. They've got Journey to the
Oh, okay,
Center of
yeah.
the Earth and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, so had this whole steampunky area. I'm trying to think about, but everything else, I couldn't understand what the sea link was. They had a Toy Story area, they had the Tower of Terror.
Oh, classic.
What did they have? What else did they have? And I don't know. They had just lots of kind of random stuff kind of bolted. I mean, it was all beautifully themed. It wasn't our favorite theme park just because like the thrills weren't like really thrilling enough. It was beautiful. And like you say, the hype and the level of theming in Japan, like everyone is dressed up, everyone except us. So we felt very left out. Everyone has got their cute like hat on of whatever it is they're going as. But we also went to Universal
Oh, yeah.
Studios in Osaka, and that was really fantastic. We really enjoyed that one.
Universal is great. I've only been to the one in the States, but it's arguably one of the best ones.
Yeah.
And theme parks are great. I've not been to a huge amount of them, but certainly mainstream ones such as going to Disney, going to Universal, Alton Towers over here, which is a not a regular visit, but I've been every couple of years.
Really, I've never been. I'm so jealous. I'd love to go to Alton Towers
See,
this year. I need to add it onto my
you
list.
really need to add this to your travel list. I mean, it's one of the kind of British staples. If not,
Yeah.
it should be made one of those like heritage sites that you can never destroy. Largely because nearby to where I live, there used to be a theme park called Camelot, which was Arthurian based.
Yeah.
So it was all Knights of the Round Table and the Lady in the Lake and all these kind of crazy things. And many years ago, it was torn down and destroyed. And a major part of my childhood was going to the theme park, which was only about 20-minute drive away, and having some of the best times of my life. But as a backup, 2 hours away was Alton Towers.
I love the fact that Alton Towers is a backup.
Yeah, I know,
Oh,
I know.
well,
I
right.
don't know if it was because it's further away or because it was bigger. I don't know, but it was always my second thought because Camelot for me was better. You got to interact with the Black Knight and he throws stuff at you and you'd see the wizards going around and you'd see jesters and all this crazy stuff. It was a really fun part of my life, but as I say, Alton Towers was a backup. I'm sorry, Alton Towers, but you're massive and you're huge, but Camelot was always my go-to. But yeah, you have to go.
Yeah, I'm desperate to go.
This is your plan now.
Yeah, this is my plan. I love the stuff I've seen of the Wicker Man ride. I'm really excited for that. And all the other
Yes.
rides, but I'm desperate to go on the Wicker Man ride there.
The Oblivion ride is always one that terrifies me the most. I've ridden it multiple times,
Yeah.
and every time I go on it, my eyes always closed because the idea of plummeting down into a hole in the ground where there's nothing to see but blackness does not fill me with excitement.
Oh.
But yeah, you need to go.
Yeah.
I had some great fun memories going to a Lego store where they built a reenactment of that exact ride. including the sound effects. So you've got these little Lego characters going up the ramp and then dropping down into the hole. And it's insane. It's the one in Manchester Trafford Centre, one of the Discovery Centres there. And they built essentially part Blackpool and part Alton Towers. And you saw this interactive ride, and it's the Oblivion, the one that I hate the most. But that's the first thing you'll go to is the Oblivion ride and enjoy it. I'm sure you will.
Yeah, I will. Thank you.
I'm just helping out. I'm just helping out.
Yeah.
As a not so well traveled person compared to yourself, it's nice to be able to give you a destination that you've not been to before. So that's exciting.
Plenty of destinations I've not been to. There's always something new. It's like any of these open world games that we both enjoy. You think, I'm on my way to this village. And then you're like, oh, but what if I just go down this path? Oh, what's behind this tree? Oh, what's in this cave? And that's just the world.
Absolutely love it. Listeners, while we are chatting, there's a couple of maps on my wall. One is a map of Grand Theft Auto 5 Los Santos. And the other map, as Laura and I were discussing earlier, is the map of Skyrim, the province of Whiterun. A very amazing open world game that I'm still playing now after 6 or 7 years. It's fantastic. As I was saying before we even got to chatting, I just like to walk around. Not necessarily do any kind of missions or gameplay itself, just walking through a forest, walking through a snow-covered mountain, standing by a stream. Just an escapism, because sometimes we need it, even if it is in a video game format.
Absolutely.
It really helps.
Yeah.
In terms of escapism, sticking with your travels, when you do travel around, do you take any kind of literature to take your mind away from what you're already immersing yourself in?
I mean, I always pack too many things, including too many books, whatever, and then don't get around to reading them, because inevitably, yeah, when we travel, we'll go out at, I don't know, whatever time in the morning, not too early, a little light in. And then you end up not coming in until the early hours, because exactly like playing a game, even if you think, well, we'll go here, you find 3, 4, 5 other things to do on the way, and you rack up 30,000-40,000 steps in a day, or we do, because it's just, there's another little art gallery, or there's another coffee shop, or you've seen a bit of street art, or you've followed a cat. That happens quite regularly. And it's just things happen one after the other. And before you know it, you're out all day. So I never end up reading or even writing enough when I go away. The plan was, I always take my laptop and I think, oh, if I've gone to this, do this thing, like going to Universal, I'll write it up tonight. Of course I don't. I have to just make notes and do it all when I get back, because there's too much to see and do while we're traveling, I think.
I suppose it's hard to kind of take away the enjoyment of what you're experiencing to sit in front of a laptop or a book and pen to paper, as it were, but as long as you've got those memories, it's a fun thing to look back on or think back on.
Occasionally, and I know lots of people do this, is wanting to read a book that's set in the place you're traveling to.
Yes.
And I've always tried to do that, and sometimes if it's not a kind of book you would naturally read, it's a bit, I don't know, it feels a bit forced. But I read a really good one when we were in Japan, so I wanted to recommend it, because I just remembered, actually I read it when I was there, and it really did enhance the experience. It was The 1000 Autumns of Jacob de Zoet, which is a David Mitchell book. So David Mitchell that wrote Cloud Atlas and things.
Okay.
A book by him. So if you liked his kind of trippy time travel, you know, multi-universe kind of books, it's a really fun read. But if you're in Japan, it's even better, because it's all set in Japan.
Wow, that's a great recommendation.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's right up my street.
Yeah.
I love a good book. One that immerses you, one that engrosses you in the story and the plot and the characters. Mm-hmm. It's another way of traveling, I suppose. You're going to these other places because your mind's taking you there.
Definitely.
But it's always nice to be able to do an actual travel. You know, it's not necessarily just reliant on books and reading and memory.
Yeah.
What's next in terms of a destination plan? Where's your next mainstream plan taking you?
We've been talking for years of wanting to go to South America and go for longer. Okay. I've worked in Ecuador for a month a few years ago, and it gave me a real taste for it. And then went to Cuba, which isn't quite South America, but, you know, similar part of the world. We were supposed to go during COVID with some friends of ours. He's an astronomer, and he was going for the eclipse, which would have been in December 2020. And obviously all of that was cancelled with lockdowns. So that's a trip that's going to be a long awaited one whenever it comes around. But also, because we're relying on things like house sitting and work away, we tend to get kind of pulled wherever someone will take us.
Yeah.
So we'll apply for, you know, all these things. And if someone pops up in, I don't know, wherever, France, Denmark, wherever, and says, oh, yeah, we could host you for a month, then that's all we'll go. So you have to keep quite open to that.
Wow. That's such an exciting way to get around the world.
Oh, yeah, it really is. Yeah, we're very lucky.
I've barely touched the surface. I've been to America twice, and Spain mostly, and rest of it in the UK. I've not tapped into any kind of travel spectrum, but hopefully, as I'm getting older, I'll be able to experience the world.
Where are your top destinations then? Where would you really like to go?
I mean, I'd really like to see, you know, somewhere cold, like somewhere in Scandinavia. Because, you know, especially like the Northern Lights aspect, it'd be so nice to see something like that. Possibly somewhere like Africa. Not necessarily for the wildlife, but it's almost so picturesque. You know, we see all these bits of footage of like amazing sunsets and sunrises with all the hills in the background and various bits of wildlife walking around, but really appeals to me. And then, although it's a highly dangerous place, somewhere like the Amazon rainforests, I know it's full of deadly beasts and people and creatures, but it always looks so stunning on camera.
Yeah.
I would like to be immersed in something like that.
Do you know what? This sounds all like name check, but like that's where I was working when I was working in Ecuador.
Wow.
And I didn't see as much wildlife as I hoped, but that's because the people we were with were doing a good job of keeping it all away. So we wouldn't get, there was literally a man walking around, or several men because they had shifts, just to deter snakes like 24/7.
Oh my God.
Which was, I don't like snakes very much. So that was really good. But yeah, I was really hoping I'd see, I don't know, something, a leopard, a monkey, a river dolphin.
Something.
Didn't see anything. Heard a lot, but didn't see anything.
Oh, what a disappointment that you couldn't get to see or hear what you wanted.
Yeah, I heard loads. Like, it was so noisy all the time, which is
really
exciting, but didn't see anything.
Oh, well, you know, hopefully someone can make a way of you seeing an animal at some point on your next travels. What animal would you like to see mostly on your travels?
I love bears.
Oh, okay.
I went and did a kind of bear tracking thing in Finland like 8 years ago. So you saw European bears and they were superb. Like, it was really good seeing them. Polar bear would be incredible. But at the same time, I feel a bit mixed about getting too close to polar bears.
Yeah.
Good for them and that kind of trail tourism, I don't know about. But seeing a polar bear in the wild would be, that would be pretty good.
So cool. Wow. Again, great things to aspire to want to see and do. Oh my God.
I don't know if I'll see one at Alton Towers. I don't think I can match these two up.
It's never that cold.
No.
I think you'd be fine to not worry about bumping into a polar bear in Alton Towers, but I do hope you get to go because it's an exciting time ahead.
Yes, thank you. It certainly is. Yeah.
Okay, so we're getting to the closing stages of the episodes. I know, folks, I know it's sad. It's a great conversation. It really is. But, you know, at the time of recording, it's getting close to bedtime for us, so we can't be chatting all night. So I thought I'd give yourself, Lauren, a chance to talk about how people can follow you, how they can get hold of you, how they can see where you're going on your next journey. How can people reach out?
I'd love people to reach out. That'd be fantastic, especially if you've got an idea for somewhere we could go, visit, work, live. That'd be great. Our website is www.twohumansandadog, but that's spelled T-W-O, twohumansandadog.com. And my dog has an Instagram account. I don't, but he has an Instagram account. And it's at Belka, B-E-L-K-A, _ Pomscolly, Pomscollie. I also do a folklore traveling podcast with some friends of mine that I met in the Isle of Skye called Traveling Ghouls. And our Instagram is at traveling_ghouls. And we should have a website soon as well, hopefully.
See, there's lots of ways to get involved in all this travel goodness.
Yeah.
It's just an exciting time. I mean, being a pet owner, being a traveler, being a blogger, being a guide, being a podcaster, you've got a lot of plates up in the air right now. And you're still finding time to talk to me. It's impressive.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
As it goes with every time I close my episodes, folks, if you want to reach out, whether it be to comment on the episode, let me know what you think about the topics I'm discussing, or if you have any messages to pass on to Lauren or any other guest, it's all at Davey A Talks. You'll find me on the socials under that. Find me, get in touch, let me know what you think. If you want to be a guest on the show, much like Lauren has today, reach out. I'm happy to talk to anybody. If you've got a microphone and an opinion, come and join me for a chat. Any closing remarks, Lauren? As we say, a fond farewell to everyone.
Just thanks so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure and a nice reminder of Skyrim. I'm going to go and load that up again now. Thanks.
Anything that gets people playing Skyrim, it's worth doing. Thank you so much for your time. I hope you have a great day going forward.
Thank you. You too.
Listeners, as always, thanks very much for your time. Thanks for pressing play. Thanks for following. Do spread the word. DVA Talks is still new. It's still fresh, but hopefully here for a long time. And have yourself a great day. I'll speak to you soon. Take care.